numbers told the story they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Monday edition of A Numbers Game, hour number two. It is Matt Brown in for Gil for the next few days. We're going to continue to talk some NFL stuff along the way. We will look at the college football world a little bit later in the hour as well. But let's kick things off with my favorite site to go and get information, Pro Football Focus, Ben Brown. You can find him over there. No relation as far as I know, Ben, between you and I. None as far as I know anyway.
Yeah, I haven't been made aware of anything, but obviously us Browns obviously have, you know, the uncanny connection in certain ways. So I'm sure this is going to be a great segment.
I got a little red in the beard there too. So, you know, I mean, maybe, right. Yeah, maybe some stuff going on. I got a little bit of that going. So I do want to start with one of the things that came out that I thought was a little bit curious. And I want to get your thoughts here with the Colts deciding to one, name Anthony Richardson starter and then decide to not play him in the second preseason game. I don't really understand with a guy that seems to need reps more than anything else and not really a guy that seems incredibly polished right now. What do you make of this? And does that make you even less excited about it? Probably a team that you're not very excited about in the first place.
Yeah, I do think it's an interesting decision, obviously, not to get him reps. I'm not surprised that they did actually name him the starter. I do think if you can kind of, you know, evaluate some of these young, you know, signal caller type situations and who they have as the backup, like Gardner Minshew and Anthony Richardson are probably in a lot of ways on opposite ends of the spectrum as far as like how you're going to, you know, design and implement an offensive scheme that's really going to maximize one of their strengths, right? So I thought that they had to make a decision early on, and it does seem like, you know, the one case, kind of like you mentioned with Anthony Richardson, is the fact that he just doesn't have a ton of reps, right? And he probably doesn't have a ton of reps in a pro style scheme, and getting those reps is really going to be the only case where he can actually be, you know, a legitimate starting quarterback at the NFL level. So I like the fact that they've gone with him right away, you know, try to instill some confidence in him, but to not give him reps in the second preseason week, I think is probably a little bit of a miss. Obviously, you know, Shane Steichen comes from the Philadelphia Eagles, you know, coaching branch tree that maybe doesn't place a ton of emphasis on preseason games. And maybe that's the one follow-up for it. But I think getting this entire offense, especially, you know, the young receiving unit that they have available, as many game reps as possible is only going to, you know, help them long-term. So I think it was probably a miss from preseason week two, but I do think long-term, you know, Anthony Richardson starting from week one on is very much going to be the best long-term outlook for this Indianapolis Colts team.
So Ben, we look at this team and I don't think it's really under the radar. I think the Falcons are a team that's people who are really kind of in the bubble are at least curious about with this offense. You do have Bijan Robinson in there with Kyle Pitts, who ran a ton of routes just at the wide receiver position last year, moving guys around. Maybe Bijan Robinson goes in, plays a little slot, whatever we might see. I mean, we see him run eight routes in 17 different dropbacks there for Desmond Ridder over the course of the preseason. Do you think this offense has a decent amount of upside here, or do you think that Desmond Ridder is too limited to take advantage of it?
Yeah, I think it's going to be weird in the way in which they kind of approach playing offense, right? Like, obviously, I think they're going to have one of, if not the most unique offensive schemes in football, going to be probably the most run-heavy team in football in a lot of ways. Like, there isn't probably a ton of upside, at least as far as like scoring points, if you are going to focus on that. But winning a lot of ugly games, especially given their schedule, I think is very much a distinct possibility. And it is kind of, I would say, almost intriguing in the way in which they've not only approached the preseason, but the way in which it's kind of broken from a betting perspective. Because to me, you know, watching the game that they had this weekend, like Desmond Ridder looked, you know, really good. I think he was 7-9 for 80 yards, basically. But he kind of got like unlucky in certain situations. I think his interception in the red zone was like tipped and deflected and landed in basically defensive lineman's, you know, lap at that point in time. So those sorts of fluky type plays, I think maybe are going to point to, like, a lot of people are going to point to Desmond Ridder maybe not being that all that good, but I think he actually looked really good from a PFF grading perspective. He had one touchdown that should have probably been caught that was dropped in the end zone as well. So some of those things obviously don't show up in the traditional box score stat. And if you weren't watching the game, isn't going to be a really direct takeaway, but I think overall this offense has some pretty intriguing opportunities. And I do think if you buy into Arthur Smith kind of being a, you know, a little bit of a, you know, a revolution from an offensive play calling standpoint, like they could be, I would say, a lot better than what people project. And given the fact that they are, you know, in the NFC South, which is very much the worst division in football, like they could win some ugly games pounding the rock quite a bit. And if they do get one or two big Bijan Robinson, you know, breakaway type carries in those games, like, they're going to be set up for a lot of success. So I do think they are maybe a little bit under the radar. I think if you watch what Carolina did this past week, and maybe even a lesser extent Tampa Bay, like there's a scenario where the Falcons are very much probably the second best team in this division. If they do get one or two breaks their way heading down the stretch, like they could very much be in line to win this division. So I am more intrigued after this past weekend than what I was before with the Atlanta Falcons. And I do think if you buy into Arthur Smith, there is definitely an upside case for them to actually make the playoffs.
Talking to Ben Brown from Pro Football Focus, if you look at these NFC South odds, Saints plus 120, Falcons plus 215, Panthers 4-1, and Bucks 8-1. I'm glad you brought up the Panthers because I know you guys are seeing what everyone seems to see, and that is that this offensive line looks really, really bad. And if that's the case, it's going to be very hard for a rookie quarterback to succeed. I actually kind of liked the Panthers heading into the preseason, and then now what I'm seeing, I kind of like them a lot less. What do you think? What is kind of like the bull case here for this team? And then is the bear case like one of the worst teams in the NFL?
Yeah, I very much think the bear case is one of the worst teams in football, and they just don't have a ton of talent, right? And it goes back to what they did, you know, with the first overall selection. Obviously, getting Bryce Young in the building is a huge win for them from an organizational standpoint, but to give up DJ Moore, who was kind of going to be the one guy that could really separate, I would say right away, like that's not going to help the offensive line struggles either or something. So it does seem like there are some confounding variables happening for them offensively. And it is, you know, kind of a spot that, you know, Frank Reich has in certain points struggled at previously throughout his 10 years, especially for the Indianapolis Colts. So I think unless Jonathan Mingo can emerge very quickly as a wide receiver type one, or, you know, they're more willing to get Laviska Shenault involved kind of underneath and maybe some more gadgety type plays and low ADOT type plays. Like this is a scenario where they don't have a ton of other receivers that I think can separate and separate quickly, especially at this point in his career. So I'm concerned about where they're headed offensively. And I do think that, you know, the bearish case is probably the most likely outcome right now. I don't see a ton of upside, I guess, if Adam Thielen, you know, loses 5 years from his career or something and goes back to a really decent underneath type receiver. That could be the one outcome. But I think they have a ton of issues at both the offensive line and wide receiver position to the point where there's just not enough around Bryce Young this year, I would say, to have them really be all that successful offensively. And if that happens, I don't think the defense is going to carry them far enough to not end up with, you know, one of the worst records in football when it's all said and done.
Ben, the Chargers fooled me last year. So heading into this season, I think I'm just a little too scarred to want to back them yet again. But you do look, the change in offensive coordinator, you bring in Kellen Moore, they go and get Johnson to go along with Keenan Allen, to go along with Mike Williams. You have one of the guys with the biggest arm in the NFL. Criminal last year that he was like 26th ADOT. I mean, there's absolutely not utilizing his natural weapons out there. What do you think about this Chargers team? I mean, it seems as if on paper, if you look at it, it's hard to really poke holes in it.
Right. I definitely agree with you, Matt. And I do think there is, you know, from a betting perspective for me too, I think like everyone's kind of been let down by the Chargers in the last couple of years. Right. And they definitely haven't lived up to expectations, but then to me, like, you kind of got to zig when other people are zagging. And I do think it creates a buying opportunity. And, you know, not only the offensive additions that you talked about, I do think Kellen Moore could be, you know, one of the best offensive play callers in football. If that does happen, that's going to open up so many things. It does seem like Clinton Johnston as well is getting a ton of positive reports, very much going to make up for if Keenan Allen is kind of continuously aging in a lot of ways. But I think you look at where they're at defensively as well, right? And they had a ton of, you know, key offseason acquisitions last year that really didn't get fully into the fold and really didn't get, I would say, the production that they kind of expected, you know, especially with the Brandon Staley background of being this guru type defensive coordinator. And I think that that's the piece that I really think, you know, creates quite a bit of upside for the Chargers in 2023, is if some of those pieces from last year can finally come together and JC Jackson does kind of, you know, reemerge as a shutdown cornerback, because we have seen signs from, you know, Asante Samuel being a little bit of a playmaker in the back half of that defense. And if they can get guys like Joey Bosa, you know, going and in the fold, like they're kind of an intriguing defense as well. And they have one of the best playmakers at safety in the NFL that can play both the run and the pass in a lot of ways. And we maybe don't fully understand, you know, how beneficial that can be to a defense, especially given, you know, the play caller situation, like I mentioned with Brandon Staley. So I think they're intriguing. I don't know if they're going to get up to, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs type level, but I think if I'm trying to buy into a team like, you know, the Chargers or maybe even like the Buffalo Bills, I'm probably leaning in the Chargers direction, because I do think they're going to end up as probably that second tier of AFC teams and give the Chiefs, I would say, a number of quality games as we come up on this 2023 season.
Ben, we've got about 90 seconds left. Which team is getting too much helium here. I mean, the teams that come to mind, it seems like the Jags, the Lions, the Bears, everyone is really pumping those teams up. Maybe there's someone else that you have in mind. What team is getting too much of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you definitely hit it with the Detroit Lions, basically. You know, they're getting a lot of steam. I do buy into the Jags a little bit more than what people I buy into it probably as much as anybody else. But to me, a team that I just don't know if they're actually going to get there is the Baltimore Ravens. Obviously, they've had some very recent defensive acquisitions, but it seems like they're going to have a ton of holes still on their roster. I don't really believe in Odell Beckham Jr. kind of being the answer for them at the wide receiver position. So unless Zay Flowers, I would say, gets into the fold and kind of emerges as that number one wide receiver option quickly for them, I think it could be another long year for them. Everyone wants to say that Todd Monken is going to kind of revolutionize this offense and make it much more, you know, a heavy passing attempt, downfield type play. And I just don't really see that fitting in with what they have from a personnel perspective. And I don't buy into where they're at defensively or in the secondary, especially with another Marlon Humphrey injury. So I think if you're buying into any team in the AFC North, like the Ravens seem like probably the clearest fade, I would say, at this point in time, and are very much probably not going to live up to, I would say, what their betting market expectation is right now.
Ben, 10 seconds. It's August 21st. Who wins the Super Bowl?
Chiefs, unfortunately. I know it's boring. Chiefs, Seahawks, though.
Okay, there we go. There's the other side of all that. Find his work over at Pro Football Focus. He is Ben Brown. Thanks for joining us today, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Have a great show.
When we come back, an interesting market in the NFL where we can compare who's going to have the most wins. It's head-to-heads. Me and Kelly going to talk it next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Throughout the NFL preseason, the VSiN experts are busy evaluating every team to give you the betting edge. Our updated NFL betting guide is due out later this month to help you get ahead. The upcoming NFL season, picks from every on-air host, team-specific preseason analysis, how to use VSiN betting splits and football contest strategies. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today for as low as $19 American and reserve your copy of the guide or take advantage of our football season special. Get access to everything we do now through the Super Bowl for only $199. VSiN.com/subscribe if you would like to do that. It was right there at the end, Kelly, so we need to bring it up again. It was, yes, the boring answer of the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl, but then Ben Brown of Pro Football Focus decided to say against the Sea Chickens.
Yep.
So, yeah, Seahawks. Watch out. Seahawks Chiefs Super Bowl with the Chiefs coming out on top. If you wanted to get a ticket in your account right now on the Seahawks, they are 30-1 to win the Super Bowl. So if they do play out to get there, Kelly, you could make some money off of that 30-1 ticket.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just going to see what they are to win the NFC 13-1. So makes sense there. That's it's not a bet I will be joining him on, but I think Seahawks are going to be very talented. And look, the NFC does not have a lot of great teams to speak of in it.
I have this in my account, but it's just the Seahawks to win the division. I do not have them to win the conference or to win the Super Bowl. It was just, I value a lot of the quarterback play, right? And Geno Smith certainly is not going to be, I don't think he's probably going to be another top eight quarterback in the NFL, but can he be an upper half quarterback? I think so. And do I think that there's certainly a world that exists in which the 49ers quarterback situation is absolutely murky all season long, and they might even be juggling between a couple of guys because Brock Purdy ends up not being the dude that they thought that he is? I mean, I think that a world exists like that. I mean, he is certainly not sneaking up on anyone this year. Last year, this is a guy that nobody thought was even going to make the team, much less actually play. So there was no study on him. There was no tape. There was no familiarity whatsoever. I can guarantee you everyone spent all offseason trying to figure out his strengths and weaknesses and how to go about neutralizing all of that. Now, Kyle Shanahan, certainly the great neutralizer in all of that too, because he is the guy that is going to take any of those weaknesses and try and just smooth them on out there. And then, like, let's go ahead and try to do it. This will be a very, very Kyle Shanahan heavy influence, in my opinion, if this team goes out and has a ton of success. But
I agree with that. I think I've come around, though, on, you know, like a lot of people were saying this last year, and I kind of scoffed at it when I first heard it, about like the quarterback play not mattering too much in San Francisco for how good they are at every other position around there. I don't know if I really bought into that when people were first bringing that up last year, and we first saw Brock Purdy kind of enter that offense. I'm kind of more on that page this year, Matt. I think we're making too much of what's going to happen in the with the 49ers in the quarterback position. I think Purdy will likely be fine. Otherwise, I think there's three guys that could probably get the job done. I'm not really excited about Sam Darnold or Trey Lance. I think it's kind of absurd that Sam Darnold, we're really talking about Sam Darnold making a start for anybody. I don't think that's happening. I think it will be Brock Purdy or Trey Lance ends up looking better and maybe he gets some run. But I think they're just so good and this NFC is so depleted. I don't know how much it's going to end up mattering until maybe you hit the playoffs, right? And you start hitting some really good teams in the playoffs. I think the 49ers are going to be just fine during the regular season.
Well, let's see just exactly how fine you think they're going to be, because they are listed a few different times in this market that you found. It is head-to-head bets on on win total, just head-to-head matchup bets here. And so you're given a team with some odds attached to them, and will the other team or that team have more wins? Now, this first one is interesting, Kelly, because the Ravens are minus 700 to have more wins than the Commanders, plus 475 if you wanted the Commanders side of things. Now, these win totals, if you're wondering, the Ravens is set at 10.5. That's what the books think that they're kind of median win total there. And then the Commanders at 6.5. So what's like the bear case for the Ravens? Would you say like 7-10?
Oh, 8-9? I'll go 7. Yeah, 7 or 8. Yeah.
So if it's 7-10, or let's say 8-9 or something like that for this Ravens team, so you would then need the Commanders to either get to 8 wins or get to 9 wins, right?
Right.
If you do the adjusted win totals on the Commanders to set it at 7.5, and if you wanted to bet the over, which would be the 8 wins, and we're saying like maybe a bad case scenario for the Ravens would be 7-10, you're only getting plus 175 on that. If you set it to 8.5 and they need to get to 9 wins, you're only getting plus 275 on that. So you are getting plus 475 on this, right? Like, you are getting plus 475 in this bet on the Ravens, in which we think the only way you're winning this bet is if the Ravens only win 7 or 8 games. So in theory, you would need the Commanders to get to 8 or 9 wins that is anyway. So in a weird way, this, if you are bearish on the Commanders and you are a little, I mean, you're bullish on the Commanders, a little more bearish on the Ravens, this is actually a decent bet, like, as opposed to like messing with their win totals.
Yeah, I don't know how many there's of these you're going to run and want to bet right away, but the breakdown you just did is why I wanted to include that one off the top, because it's a, we've talked a lot, especially the past couple years, about these alternate win totals and how much value they can have. Think about this as another way to play those, right? Where it's, yes, you have to be a person who's down a bit on the Ravens and higher a bit on the Commanders. But if you are, this is a no-brainer bet to me, Matt. You know, yeah. And I'm not one of those people, but I know there are a lot of people out there that are higher on the Commanders this year. They think they're going to be that third team in the NFC East and play some decent football this year. And okay, I'm higher on the Ravens than what Ben Brown just talked about. Mm-hmm. But what I do know is the AFC North is arguably the toughest division in football, if not the toughest division in football.
Listen, preseason for me, I don't think there's any question whatsoever. Yep.
Okay.
Right?
So me either. To me, that's the toughest division in football. So you talk about Lamar Jackson gets banged up, misses a few games, things go a little south for this team. This bet becomes immediately live. So I think it's another way, and we talk about this a lot on the network, a lot on this program, but it's another way to make a similar bet at better odds, right? If I'm playing an alt win total theoretically on Washington, but it's parlaying in with a fade of Baltimore, essentially.
Hey, look at it this way. At the very least, if you live in the area and you're a Commanders fan and you hate the Ravens because they're the other team in the area, this is a plus 475 way to sweat the team that you like and fade the team that you hate all in one bet, right? I mean, you get to fade the Ravens because you're going to need them to underperform in this, obviously, and you need your team to overperform. And like we said, so if we're thinking the worst case scenario for a Ravens team is kind of like a 7-10, maybe an 8-9 type season, the over 7.5 is only plus 175. For Washington, and the over 8.5 is only plus 275. So, I mean, you're getting plus 475 in this. And so that one was at least fairly interesting.
No, totally. I think I didn't list it. We'll go through some of these. I didn't list everything that you can go to DraftKings. You can see all the options that they have, but I think there's a lot of setups like that you can think about that way with too, where it's, think about some of the top and bottom end teams and you know, how much better, how much worse can they really be? I think there is some value that you can make on some bets there.
Well, I mean, one of the ones that stands out, again, this is, all of these are listed over at DraftKings, and the odds are attached to the Cincinnati Bengals -250 versus the Browns at +190. Now, these preseason win totals are only a game apart.
Right.
10.5 on the Bengals, 9.5 on the Browns. And this one's even a little bit more interesting because there is some correlation involved in this one as well, because if the Browns are to get there, they are going to likely have to hurt the Bengals getting there as well somewhere along the way. They play them twice. So, I mean, you're looking at a direct head-to-head in this where you would be helping yourself. And if you're bullish on the Browns, right, I guess the only other – because if we're going to bring up the alt-win total thing and say that maybe it's better to play this than the other – if you're bullish on the Browns, there is also – the alt-win total of 10.5 is +210, which is better than the +190 here. And then you could still have Cincinnati have an awesome season at 13-4 or 14-3, and you would still be able to cash a bet that actually is a little bit higher than this. So we always say
– compare. Yep.
Shop around, compare, do whatever. Like, I think this is more of a bet – on the Browns than it is a bet against Cincinnati. If that's the case, you can literally just tick their win total up by one and you're getting +210 on that. And then you're not having to fade what is widely considered to be one of the better teams, one of the Super Bowl favorites in Cincinnati.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good call on that one. I don't know if there was a couple that jumped out to you. I think there are a couple that I liked here on this first page were Jags +200 against the Chiefs. I mean, we're talking regular season win totals. I think you're talking about the Jags schedule is very fascinating. Obviously, they play a tough non-division schedule, but their division is complete trash with all those three AFC South teams in it. I think you're getting 2-1 up against its Chiefs team that look is very good, but it's not like they have an easy schedule and they play in a tough division. I think there might be a little value on that Jags one. The other two I circled. Yeah, Jags again versus the Bengals, and then Eagles -155 over the Bills.
Yeah, if you want to look, I mean, that the Jags Chiefs one's at least minimally interesting, getting the 2-1 on the Jags over the Chiefs, because the Chiefs, as good as they are, I don't want to bet against Andy Reid or Patrick Mahomes. They do enter with the fifth toughest schedule, at least on paper, and you do get the Jags that are in the upper half of easiest schedules entering the season. So these are real things, right? I mean, of course, teams are going to be better and worse, and we'll have to deal with all of that as well. When we come back, let's talk some college football with Thor Nystrom.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Legendary sports bettor Billy Walters sat down with Brent Musburger for an interview. And the only place to see it here is on VSiN. Billy reveals his systems for betting the NFL, shares some unbelievable betting stories, and gives the details on Phil Mickelson's gambling, including trying to bet an event that he was playing in. Check out the interview tomorrow. It's 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 Pacific, here on VSiN. Now, there should be the asterisk there, Kelly, we should say. Phil was trying to bet on himself. He was trying to bet on the U.S. side of things. Like, you know, again, that is an important deal. He wasn't betting he wasn't trying to bet against himself, in which case really does bring in some integrity stuff, but it was a bet on. It was a bet for. He felt really good about things.
Yeah, he was liking their chances.
Yes. So, I mean,
didn't make the bet.
You know, and the other thing, well, here's the other thing. It's like he's basically says the right thing here, because his response was, I did not bet on that, which, so both things can be true.
That's right.
Billy's side, which is he wanted to bet it, and then Phil said, I did not bet it. Both things can be true. So, like, everyone's living in this world where, you know, their statements are true and no one has to worry about it.
Should be a fascinating interview to check out, though, tomorrow for sure. And Billy, always always interesting, big book out. Obviously, the Phil Mickelson stuff, a big part of that. Check it out tomorrow. Should be good.
Yeah, and listen, him and Brent have a great relationship, so I'm sure he was able to open up really nicely to Brent. So, again, tomorrow, 2 Eastern, 11 Pacific here on VSiN. Let's talk some college football. Now joining us here, Thor Nystrom. You can catch all his stuff over on Betting Pros. Thor, thanks for the time, man. Appreciate it.
You got it, boys. Good to be here.
So as we are heading into to week zero, I want to talk more some macro thoughts with you. And, of course, all eyes will be on the SEC. You still have Georgia. You still have Alabama. You have LSU that is beginning a ton of buzz as we're kind of the offseason progressed, right? I mean, the buzz about LSU just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. When you look at the SEC in general, is it kind of those three teams and everybody else? Do you think there's a sleeping giant that's in there as well?
Yeah, I like the way that you set that up. If there's the surprise team that's going to jump up and scare people, for me, it's Texas A&M. They, you know, you think about TCU last year when they made the title run. The year before, the reason the wheels fell off, the defense fell off a shelf, and they couldn't pass the ball. Over the offseason, they hired Sonny Dykes. He directly addressed those two things. He's a, you know, passing game guru. And then the defensive side of the ball, they made all these smart signings in the portal. Texas A&M directly addressed the two major issues they had last year, offensive side of the ball in general, and then they had issues stopping the run. They had actually had the nation's best pass defense last year, if you can believe it, but they had that really young front seven. You know, a couple of years ago, they signed, was it six of the top 10 defensive linemen, whatever, then they were playing all those kids, right? So, you know, and then you have the new offensive coordinator and Bobby Petrino, where you expect the offense to jump up. You're not going to have the injuries. Devin Achane was injured last year. Anaya Smith was injured last year, whatever. Now all the kids are older. So if there's one team that I would expect to surprise, it's Texas A&M. But yeah, the three kings at the top of the conference, as it were, that you suggest, that's what it is.
So you look to win the entire thing, right? National championship, plus 220 for Georgia, 6-1 on Bama. And then you get Ohio State, Michigan, and then you find LSU right there at 11-1. Are you buying in to this LSU squad? I mean, listen, this is, I get it. There's a lot of five-star recruits, a lot of four-star recruits, and certainly Brian Kelly has been there, done that, as one of the better coaches in the NCAA. It seems like a lot of steam coming in on LSU in the offseason.
Yeah, let's just say I have a lot of LSU in my portfolio.
All right.
A lot of tickets purchased. Yeah, I mean, I got the SEC title game purchased. I got the over on LSU. I have national title and you know, making the CFP ones as well. Really high on LSU. It's not a surprise to me that the market has, sort of swarmed around them and been pushing these things as we get closer to the season, whatever. My projected win total on LSU is just an eyelash under 10, 9.95. That's higher than Alabama. In my system, I have LSU one spot higher in my power rankings too. I really like LSU. I believe Alabama's a little bit down. So LSU is the team that I expect to be playing Georgia in the SEC title game. And Georgia better prepare for a fight this time. It's going to be different than last time. Cause LSU, obviously they bring in everybody back. The people they sloughed off the team was people they wanted to slough off the team. Mm-hmm. Kayshawn Boutte actually wanted to go back, and Brian Kelly was like, I don't think so. Remember, Kayshawn was like, I'm coming back to school. And then the next day he's like, just kidding, I'm going to the NFL draft. Heard that that maybe Brian Kelly was like, Kayshawn, maybe you should right, consider the NFL. So yeah, I mean, Malik Nabers, he the guy that you wanted back. He's the stud. And then they went out on the portal. They got a couple of receivers. The offense is just stacked. And then on defense, you have like the singular superstar talent guy in Harold Perkins. They have a bunch of experience coming back there. Really like LSU this year.
So we're going to learn a lot about LSU in game number one. Over in the ACC side of things, the Florida State Seminoles are your second shot, and that's just barely behind Clemson. Clemson plus 145 to take it down, and then Florida State at plus 150 to take down the ACC. When we look there, how do you view Florida State as a whole, and how do you kind of see that LSU and Florida State game there on the neutral site?
Yeah, it's going to be, yeah, one or the other in the ACC as far as FSU and Clemson. And my system's got that that Florida State Clemson game, or I'm sorry, the Florida State LSU game as dang near a coin flip. I can't wait for that game. Remember last year when it opened on the Monday and it was like everyone was watching it? Yeah. You know, like on Twitter, it was the only thing you could see was people writing about that game because they had the Monday night to themselves. That game was super duper fun. And this one's going to be way better because both those programs were building for this year. They both happen to be sort of a year ahead of schedule, right? Like, I mean, LSU did way better last year than we thought they were going to do. But yeah, like that game this year, you're talking about two legitimate college football playoff contenders, not just contenders for their conference. The loser of that game, they'll still be in it. You know, then they don't have another game that they can lose, but yeah, that one's going to be fun, but I have it basically as a pick'em.
What do you look at from a Clemson standpoint? I mean, it seems like every year Clemson does something to kind of let their backers down, right? I mean, it just, it seems like you're looking at whether it was the quarterback position in DJU, who obviously is now gone, or whatever it might be. They are the very, very slight favorite. Do you have them better than Florida State in your rankings?
Just slightly. I got them two spots higher. Clemson at 8 and Florida State at 10 in my preseason power rankings. I'm a little bit more bullish on Clemson, at least as far as the ceiling goes, of this team could make the college football playoff and this team could potentially contend for the national title. Whereas if you had asked me, and I think you guys did, like each of the last couple preseasons, it was like, this team cannot win the national title. And like, you know, DJU, he's a nice kid and stuff like that. But when you're in the games against the awesome teams, they just couldn't pass effectively enough. He's not accurate enough. He can run and he can throw it deep, but he's not accurate. And so the offense would just bog down. And then the offensive coordinators they've had the last couple of years, the game plans and stuff like that, they just weren't dynamic enough. Now you have the guy in Garrett Riley who brought friggin' Max Dugan to the national title game last year. If he can do that, that guy can walk on water. Now he's working with all these talented guys there. And Kate Klubnik, you finally have a guy that can throw. We'll have to see if Clemson has enough at receiver. That's the one position that they used to be awesome at. It's come down a little bit. I do think the receiving talent may be a little bit better than maybe the last couple of years, but we'll have to see. They need someone to emerge there. But Will Shipley's obviously a stud, and the defense is going to be salty again. Jeremiah Trotter, all those different guys. So they're a dangerous team for sure.
When we look, Ohio State and Michigan, at least from a futures odds perspective, are right there neck and neck. How do you have those guys? Do you have them separated by a little bit more than maybe the odds do?
Michigan is my pick to win the national title this year. I am a little bit lower on Ohio State, I would say, than the market. The team I'm a little bit higher on in that division is Penn State. I could see Penn State usurping Ohio State this year. But Michigan is my team this year. That team is really, really good. If there's one team out there that Georgia's like, oh, man, we really don't want to run into this team in the CFP, it's Michigan. You know, just bringing everybody back and everything like that, and the dynamic running back duo they have. The offensive line has won the last two Joe Moore Awards, which has never happened. And then Jim Nagy, the Senior Bowl czar, tweeted out like a couple months ago that they have 7 guys on their preseason Senior Bowl watch list from the Michigan offensive line on it. So like they, you know, even backups on this year's offensive line are NFL prospects and everything like that. That's my squad there. Ohio State, I'm just a little bit concerned about the quarterback situation, right? Like, I mean, it was like, oh, McCord's going to be the guy. We still don't have an announcement. I heard that Ryan Day was going to the podium. I haven't heard if he's announced the starting quarterback. It's gone on a little bit too long for me where it's like you start to get a little bit skittish of what are they going to get there. So that's sort of my trepidation with them. But I love Penn State's talent on sort of the back end of that. So I could see Penn State hopping Ohio State.
November 25th could be very, very interesting. No doubt about that. You can find his great work over at Betting Pros. He is Thor Nystrom. Thor, thanks for the time, man. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you, boys.
He likes my LSU Tigers there, Kelly. Makes me a little nervous. He's got all kinds of tickets on the Tigers. He's the one that's brought those odds down, apparently.
Yeah, apparently. You're Too bad they're going to start off 0-1.
I was going to say, I don't know if people know or not, but there was a nice friendly little wager last year between Kelly and myself. Kelly, a Florida State Seminole, me with LSU. And, you know, we'll have to figure something interesting out this year definitely. As well. It'll be fun regardless, right? Like, we'll just get together and we'll just be high-fiving. And I'm sure there will be no trash talking whatsoever amongst who's going to win that game again September the 3rd, kicking it off with two very, very good teams with high hopes. When we come back, let's circle back to some of those head-to-heads and see what's going on there. And, of course, we'll run through the MLB slate as well. It is a numbers game here on a Monday.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points you can redeem for online bonus credits like bonus bets and bet insurance tokens. If you're planning a trip to Vegas, you can also convert those BetMGM points into MGM Reward points. Then you can use towards dining shows and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resort properties up and down the Las Vegas Strip and, of course, nationwide. Sign up at BetMGM.com or log on today. Get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM Rewards. Eligibility restrictions do apply. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. You must be 21 years of age or older. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets, and bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. If you are having a gambling problem, please call 1-800-GAMBLER. Got through that one before the music ran out.
Good job.
Yeah, got that
it's
one.
It's always a struggle.
Yeah, got that one. Got through that one before the music wore out. There was a...
It's maybe the most impressive thing that I've seen Gil Alexander do is that rate. It just, he rifles through it. I am pretty, it's pretty incredible. It would take me 6 minutes.
Listen, if you do it enough, then you know which words you can leave out and still get the message across, which sentences you can kind of combine to make the same thing, whatever. There was a monster read a few weeks ago that we had that you could not do it. Without the music running out. Like you are getting to the end of the music and then you're just talking over dead air and you're saying all these things that no one has any idea. It's like, nothing I can do. I tried. I read as fast as I could. I micro machine manned as much as I could. It just didn't work out. All right. So listen, we were looking at these kind of these head to heads and some of them are pretty interesting. We talked about a couple of different angles that you could get on some of these as well. One of the other ones that's fairly interesting, Kelly, is two teams that are Super Bowl favorites in the Eagles and the Bills. You're going to find the Eagles at minus 155 to have more wins than the Bills. Bills plus 120. Now, they are only separated by one game in the win total market, 11.5 for the Eagles, 10.5 for the Bills. I think this is like one of those where you're betting on maybe just very mild regression for the Eagles. And so, I don't know, man. Like, I'm not willing. I don't know how bullish you could be. I don't know if you could be bullish enough on the Bills and still feel very confident about this because, like, the Bills could win 13 games and you could still lose this. I mean, like, the Eagles could still, like, the Eagles could win 14 games this year. I mean, on paper, they're the best team in the NFL. On paper, they're the most complete team in the NFL. So, like, this one to me was one of the first ones that I looked at and I go, okay, if I was crossing things off the list, right? It's like a team in which a ceiling could be 14 wins is certainly not a team that I want to be betting against in like one of these head-to-head type markets.
Yeah, but I also think so you're saying you wouldn't be interested in betting this at all?
No.
Okay, this one, I actually would be. It would be on the Eagles side of it, though. Because I think everything you just laid out for the Bills, I think even the floor for the Eagles is still pretty high. I mean, they would have to look dramatically different as a football team overall, I think, for them to basically completely fall off the face of the earth. And meanwhile, the Bills, like you just said, they're going to have to, they could play incredible, but that's going to be tough in a very tough division. But even if they do end up with 11-12 wins, the Eagles are probably still right there. So this is one, if I had access to, I think I'd lay the minus 155 with Philadelphia.
The other one here, the Titans, minus 180 over the Texans, and they're only separated by one win in the projected win total, 7.5 for the Titans, and then 6.5 for the Texans. You're getting plus 145 on the Texans. Kelly, I actually think that, obviously because this is correlated as well, I think I would play the Texans if I had to play this one head-to-head. I think that there is a pretty bad scenario for this Titans team if things start to go south. Now, I'm not predicting a massive drop-off for Derrick Henry. He seems to be, inhuman. He seems to be a machine. That being said, we've seen running backs who have looked awesome, and then for whatever reason, over the course of an offseason, they come back and they look kind of old. And I'm not saying that's going to be Derrick Henry this year. I will say that it's within the realm of possibility. Then you look at the quarterback situation, which I'm not in love with Ryan Tannehill, never been in love with Ryan Tannehill. I think that this signing of DeAndre Hopkins doesn't really mean all that much when you have a quarterback that I don't have confidence is going to be able to get him the ball a ton, right? So, like, I would have liked DeAndre Hopkins basically to go almost anywhere else than to the Titans as far as a production standpoint goes. And then if you look at the Texans, they are not devoid of talent, this Texans team. It's just a bunch of young talent. And now you're going to need them to overperform. You're going to need CJ Stroud to look like, at least league average. You're going to need Mechie to come back off of, not playing in 2 years and look really, really good. You're going to need some stuff to kind of go in the right direction. But if I'm getting the plus money on this, like I would bet on more of the upside of a Texans team than I would on the upside of a Titans team. I think there's some decent chance for regression here for the Titans.
Yeah, I think this is sort of similar. This is where I was kind of going when we kind of ran out of time that first second we were talking. We kind of talked about that Ravens Commander setup. I think there's a lot of, like, as long as you don't think the Texans are absolutely terrible, I think there's a lot of options with them that have some value because of some of these other teams. And I'm with you, the Titans, I think at some point they hit the reset button during the season. You're going to get Levis in there. I already bet this team, you know, at a longer price, they have the fewest wins in the NFL, the Tennessee Titans. As long as you if you're kind of in my camp with that, I think you have to at least recognize there's some value on a bet like this at plus
145. Exactly, and it's of note, right? And it's worth noting that they have no commitment whatsoever to Ryan Tannehill past the season. So, like you said, if they get to midpoint in the season and they look and they go, dude, this guy is like below league average again. Like, we're just gonna go along and finish like 8-9, or which gets us a middling draft pick, which is doesn't do us any good. No, man, flip it. Let Levis go in there, throw a bunch of interceptions, like lose more games than you normally would, because Tannehill's like just good enough to win you a couple of close games, and you would actually prefer to lose those to get a better draft pick. And like, there's just a lot of reasons, like you're saying, that so long as this doesn't go crazy where the Jags, for whatever reason, fall off a cliff, which I just, again, don't think that's going to be the case. If anything, I think they're going to be better than maybe people are giving them credit for. So I'm with you on that. I would certainly be on that side of everything. Don't think I'd be back in the Colts, though, against them, weirdly enough, because I do think that there's a weird chance in that, like, Anthony Richardson could be just god awful.
Because
that is a market, by the way. Titans minus 150, Colts plus 120. I'd much rather go the Texans direction than I would the Colts, because Anthony Richardson seems like the dude that might get there towards the end of the season after he gets a ton of reps and a ton of coaching and a ton of real life experience, but I just don't think that's going to be there from the beginning, and so I would not go that direction with that one, that's for sure.
I think that actually, if I was going to attack betting the Colts, I think you'd wait for the season to get going a bit, and then maybe bet something on them, you know, an adjusted win total or something midseason.
You take a look. One of these other ones that is at least fairly interesting to me is the Cowboys versus the Jets. Cowboys are 10.5 on the win total market. The Jets are 9.5 on the win total market. Yet this is only minus 115 to plus 120 Cowboys to Jets. I think the Cowboys are going to – I like the Cowboys exponentially more than I like the Jets this season. I think the Cowboys are unfortunate in the division in which they play, because they're probably going to be a 12-win team and not win the division, but that, you know, neither here nor there. They'll make the playoffs, and I think they could end up being one of the better teams in all the NFL. The Jets, I think we're just assuming, because Aaron Rodgers is going to be taking snaps, so that's going to instantly equal so much better production. Everything's going to be so much greater. I think they'll be better. They're certainly going to be more efficient. But you mentioned, I mean, look, they're in a tough division. They have this is not one of those things where they're just going to cakewalk through this at all. And, you know, the defense is good. That's going to keep them in a bunch of games. But I think this Cowboys team just kind of at almost every level except for the quarterback position, obviously, with Dak. Overall, I kind of like the Cowboys squad a little bit better. So I like that one, especially considering it's only minus 115.
Yeah. I'm glad you picked up on that one, because that was, I mentioned liking that Eagles over the Bills. I think there's this is a similar type bet, at least in my opinion, when you're talking about the divisions. And I think Cowboys are going to be really good too. And I think the Jets are going to be good. But again, you're talking about a very, very tough division that you're going to have to grind out some wins in. That you're getting, I only got to lay minus 115 on the Cowboys in that bet. That would be a bet for me.
Over Major League Baseball, we do have an interesting game. The Giants and the Phillies are going to be going at it. Of course, we were talking with Paul Sporer earlier about the wild card situation. We know the Phillies and the Giants are both currently occupying a wild card spot. That said, we do have the Reds, the Marlins, Diamondbacks, and to a lesser extent, the Padres and the Mets that are still going to be players in all of that. Scott Alexander is listed as on the Giants side. He's an opener, just to let everybody know. So he's going to go handful of outs, and then it looks like he's going to give way to Sean Manaea a little bit later. Aaron Nola is going for the Phillies, traditionally one of the better pitchers in Major League Baseball. But that being said, he's got his last four starts have not gone great. He hasn't gone deeper than 5 1/3 in any of those, and he's given up 5-5-4 earned in 3 of those 4. So I know you look at that and you see an opener, and then you also see Nola and you think it should be one-way traffic, but I don't know. Nola's been getting knocked around a little bit here, maybe a Giant side of this thing at a pretty decent underdog at plus 155. Kelly, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on what people thought of today, I'm going to be back in here tomorrow. So there's that.
And Wednesday.
I know. You can't escape me, at least for the next couple of days here. So we'll certainly get some more thoughts on the NFL. Certainly, I have a lot of tickets already in my account, so maybe me and Kelly will talk all those things as well. Lombardi Line next. Stick around.